Hello, and welcome to the Respiratory Care March 2024 Respiratory Care Podcast and Editor's Commentary. This is Rich Branson, Editor-in-Chief of Respiratory Care. Thanks for joining us. This month's Editor's Choice is a multi-center retrospective review of the use of home oxygen therapy in a group of subjects following hospitalization for COVID-19. Friedman and others found that 25% of subjects hospitalized for severe COVID-19 infection were discharged on home oxygen. Older age, higher body mass index, diabetes, greater severity of illness, and corticosteroid use were all associated with home oxygen requirements. At a 60-day follow-up, half of patients were evaluated for using pulse oximetry, and half of those were able to have home oxygen discontinued. Creamy and Cortiani provide commentary, noting the difficulty of conducting such a trial and congratulating the author's approach despite a small sample size. They note that the use of home oxygen following admission for de novo respiratory failure was a new paradigm ushered in by the COVID-19 pandemic. They suggest a call for action to the clinical and research community to be mindful in oxygen prescription, carefully assess the need, recognize the impact on patients and caregivers, and evaluate the burden of costs on the healthcare system. Overbeek et al. Performed a multi-center cohort study of perioperative inspiratory muscle training in subjects undergoing esophagectomy for esophageal cancer. They measured maximal inspiratory pressure before and after inspiratory muscle training and inspiratory muscle training intensity variables, including training load, frequency, and durations. Associations between PI max and IMT intensity variables and postoperative pulmonary complications were determined. Improvements in IMT were not associated with reductions in postoperative pulmonary complications. Ekpat and colleagues from Mass General provide an accompanying editorial. They suggest two potential explanations for the study findings. First, that IMT has no meaningful effect as postoperative pain and inflammation negate any benefit from training. The second is that in the absence of a control group, IMT may have had an impact which was missed, owing to the lack of the control group and small study population further reduced by the study dropouts. Okazaki and Kuroto performed a bench study of high-frequency ventilators evaluating differences in airway pressures and high-frequency tidal volume between manufacturers with changes in compliance and endotracheal tube size. They found a range of performance characteristics between devices, including differences in the high-frequency tidal volume and mean airway pressure despite identical ventilator settings. Tan and others provide an accompanying opinion that noting these findings can be explained by differences in principles of operation and algorithms. They suggest that the high-frequency tidal volume has a potential advantage with respect to achieving lung-protective ventilation and minimizing fluctuations in CO2 clearance. Bruno and colleagues reported their findings from a multinational survey of medical trainees' knowledge and attitudes regarding e-cigarettes and hookah use. Respondents from Brazil, the United States, and India reported a wide range of beliefs. A quarter of respondents believe e-cigarettes were less harmful than tobacco smoking, and a third of respondents believe e-cigarettes could facilitate smoking cessation. They concluded that medical trainees frequently had incorrect or biased perceptions of e-cigarette and hookah smoking. Cara et al. Describe a single-center retrospective study of late foreign body aspiration diagnosis in 45 subjects. The most common complaints were cough and shortness of breath on admission. Most foreign bodies were organic in nature, and recurrent infections were the common finding. They suggest that a high index of suspicion in these cases, as patients commonly fail to recall the aspiration event. Rudolph and others performed a clinical study to evaluate the optimal inflation volume of an esophageal balloon in children. They used an incremental inflation calibration procedure in subjects who were apneic, calculating the esophageal elastance and maximal end-inspiratory to end-expiratory pressure difference. They found that the optimal balloon filling volume was highly variable and recommend individual calibration for each individual patient. Esophageal manometry has a wealth of useful information that's provided, tends to be more complicated than we often believe. Sancho and co-workers performed a cross-sectional study of subjects with myasthenia gravis receiving home non-invasive ventilation. Subjects were evaluated using clinical and pulmonary function data. Of 50 subjects, 32% developed bulbar symptoms and 20% of subjects requiring long-term NIV. NIV was required primarily in subjects with generalized myasthenia or those with oropharyngeal and respiratory muscle involvement. Pranav et al. Conducted a retrospective chart review in 10 neonates undergoing therapeutic hypothermia and evaluated the difference between transcutaneous carbon dioxide and arterial PaCO2. Data were analyzed using Bland-Altman plots using multiple observations per subjects. The mean difference was minus 2 to 6 millimeters of mercury. The precision was poor, ranging from 17 millimeters of mercury greater to 13 millimeters of mercury less than the actual PaCO2. They concluded that transcutaneous PaCO2 was not a useful trending tool or estimate of PaCO2 in neonates undergoing therapeutic hypothermia. Shewitch and colleagues provided a short report comparing aerosol delivery with a vibrating mesh nebulizer and jet nebulizer in subjects experiencing a severe asthma exacerbation. They found both devices resulted in improvements in FEV1, and no clinically important differences were seen between groups. This is an interesting study, and we've published several trials in a similar vein where the use of vibrating mesh nebulizers, which are far more expensive, result in about the same change in FEV1 and really no clinical differences, although there tends to be a faster response to bronchodilation with the mesh nebulizers. And this needs to be continued to be explored with the emphasis on costs. Santorisi et al. Provide a short report on a simplified method to determine mechanical power in subjects receiving adaptive pressure ventilation. Driving pressure and mechanical power have become more and more important in terms of their ability of the ventilator to cause ventilator-induced lung injury. And we're going to see more of this available probably on mechanical ventilators, making the calculations for us. But again, as with compliance and plateau pressure, patient effort markedly affects the outcome of these measured variables. And respiratory therapists need to be really cognizant of how these pressures are being measured and that they're being measured in a consistent fashion to get the right data. DeRusso and colleagues provide a narrative review on the use of negative pressure ventilation in pediatric intensive care unit. They review physiologic principles of spontaneous and negative pressure ventilation, examine the evidence for non-invasive pressure ventilation use, and give practical guidelines on clinical application and summarize areas for future studies. Negative pressure ventilation, of course, back to the iron lung, was popular during the polio epidemics, and the use of negative pressure ventilation in the U.S. these days is mostly in the pediatric ICU, where children with a much more flexible chest wall are able to be ventilated. Macedo and others provide a systematic review on the impact of positive expiratory pressure on hyperinflation in subjects with COPD. They concluded PEP can reduce hyperinflation and improve exercise tolerance. I think this is a really important aspect of exercise tolerance in COPD. We tend to think patients with COPD can't exercise because their SpO2 is too low. They become hypoxemic. But far more often, patients become unable to exercise because as the respiratory rate increases, they increase their dynamic hyperinflation and have shortness of breath unrelated to oxygenation status. We appreciate your interest in the journal, listening to the podcast, and we look forward to seeing papers from you in the future. Thanks again. To receive the content of this and past issues of the journal, visit our website at www.rcjournal.com. There you can also subscribe to receive podcasts of future issues.